Value Market is Louisville's grocer. Since 1978, Value Market has been your neighborhood grocery store for all of life's best moments. Value Market gets it. Life is busy. That's why Value Market has curbside and delivery since 2013, freeing up more of your time for the more important things in life. Kids' ball games, family visits, work, tailgating, and cookouts. Value Market gets it. That's why Value Market has four area locations to serve your grocery needs. Mid-City Mall, Outer Loop Plaza, Aircoy Manor, and Mount Washington. At Value Market, you got savings in the bag. ValueMarket.com.
Live from the Liquor Barn Studios, it's time for the V Show, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, here's Bobby V.
Not quite Bobby V. Well, he was supposed to be back today, but we had a little bit of a snafu with a flight schedule. So, it's your boy, Nicky V. One more day.
Hopefully,
Pops will be back tomorrow. Not alone, though. God forbid, we don't want that. I got my man, the professional, Jeff Lightsey Jr. in studio with me. The fabulous one, Phil Baker, is meandering around taking care of some sales stuff. So he might be popping on at some point during the show. We don't know. Leibs is going to be on today with Ennis.
Yes, and, the drive.
Yes. And a reminder, join Mark Ennis and co. And that co is Mark Lieberman, the coach, for happy hour at Twin Peaks today from 3 to 6 for $3.99, 22-ounce drafts, well drinks, and select appetizers. I don't type these up, so I don't want to be too critical. But the font for that read makes it look like it's 220-ounce beers.
It's really small, too.
Yeah, like, and that would be like a freaking keg.
Yeah,
like,
that's wild.
Get that for $4, though. But a 22-ounce frosted below freezing beer. They have 29-degree drafts there. You can't beat that. Twin Peaks, each drink, scenic views. So, yeah, check out Leibs and Mark Ennis on the drive today. Coming to you from Twin Peaks. So, good stuff there. But, no, it's me and Jeff Lightsey. We got you for the next 3 hours here on the V Show. Got a pretty good lineup of guests. We have our weekly segment with Mark Story coming up at 12:30. We'll talk a little UK. The UK non-conference basketball schedule release today. We'll get his thoughts on that and some football nuggets as well. And then I believe Chris Jones is joining us in studio.
1:30.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, is he supposed to come through? I know they made another addition today.
Big TBT. News, DJ.
Chris is supposed to join us at 1:30, so we'll see. Make sure we get that going. And talking about being a part of the team this year.
Nice. That'll be awesome. So we got all that coming to you. We got about 15 minutes before Story. So I thought about this. I thought this would be a fun way to open the show.
Yeah.
We both played sports. Mm-hmm. Tanner played sports. Tanner can weigh in, too. You guys are welcome as well. 437-9680 UPS Jobs text line if you want to be part of the show. But Steve brought this up over on Middays with Marcus Maven. Mm-hmm. And Maven chimed in, too. And I feel like everybody has had this moment. So everybody can weigh in. Maybe you cross paths with a guy that was going D1. Or might have been a pro. He might have turned out to be a pro player.
Mm-hmm.
But what was a time you were humbled? Like, you just, like, you kind of thought maybe you were kind of hot spit. Or you were like, I'm not bad at this. I can hold my own. And then somebody just completely, utterly annihilated you. Just outclassed you. And you were just like, nope.
Yeah, like so I think I've told this story before. But I was the same year high school as, like, James Quick at Trinity and all the Trinity guys. It was James, Jason Hatcher, Ryan White. Like, all those guys went D1. And so, in eighth grade...
Now, you played where?
I played in Mayo.
Okay, okay, yeah, that's Mayo. Right, that's right, that's so, right. I knew that, sorry.
So when I was in eighth grade, so this is actually before then, when I was in eighth grade, Ryan White, who ended up playing for Vanderbilt, mm-hmm. and he was committed to Louisville, ended up going to Vanderbilt, played for James Franklin. When I was in eighth grade, Ryan came to our school. I went to JCTMS, and he came to our school as an eighth grader. And he was just, like, physically, like, just huge, right?
Yeah, right.
I was like, dude, this dude. But he's the nicest dude in the world. And they played in a different little league. This is about to be a long-winded story. But they played a different little league. He played for Hikes Point. I played in the West End League. So I never actually saw him ever play football. But everybody would talk about how good he was. They won the championship and all that stuff. So the last day of school, towards the end of school, we had a field day. And finally, Like, Ryan got to show off his athleticism. But once again, super nice dude.
Right.
And everybody was trying to go at him. It's like, oh, they say you're so good.
Yeah, right.
You're so whatever.
He had the target on his back.
Right. He's just like, all right. Yo, y'all want to see it? Okay, cool. So he gets the ball. It's like pitch back tackle, whatever. He gets it. And who everybody else thought was the fastest guy comes up to tackle him, right? So you're coming full speed towards Ryan. He just clears him.
Oh, wow.
He, like, jumps over him standing straight up. And I'm like...
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay.
This kid's different.
Okay, yeah. Whatever that is, I thought I was like, because I'm having a good game or whatever. Like, I'm whatever, we get the ball to Ryan, he clears over him and runs just, like, away from everybody. I'm like, oh, okay, that's what that looks like.
Yeah.
That's what that looks like. And so I got to experience it in eighth grade. And then when we got to high school, once again, he goes to Trinity with James and Jason and all those guys. And we play them in the state championship game my sophomore year. Now, their team's full of sophomores.
Right.
Our team's full of seniors. The sophomores on our team don't play.
Right.
Like, you're just like bench warmers or whatever. But, you know, we're happy to be there. They had Daylon Dawkins, who also played D1. We kick the ball off to them to start the game. He drops the kickoff return and rolls out of bounds on the 3-yard line, 2 or 3-yard line. So I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, all right. We got it.
So they throw a screen pass. First play of the game, they throw a screen pass to James. He runs towards the sideline. There's nothing there. He reverses field into the end zone. We think we're about to get a safety.
Oh, yeah, seriously.
Safety, let's
go. Yeah, you're licking your chops.
But he just outruns everybody. 98-yard touchdown.
Oh, my God.
It was over. These sophomores are different than our seniors. And yeah, they beat us 31-0. And that's when I was like, yeah, that's when that you see the differences. Like, we had good high school seniors.
Right.
They had future D1 athletes, sophomores. It was a difference.
It was just a different weight class.
There's a difference. That's when I was like, okay, I always wanted to play ball, but I'm going to end up calling ball. Like, I'm going to be in a broadcast. Right.
You saw your future, my career path.
This dude can do this as a sophomore. We got to play each other the next 3 years. Yeah, I'm not going to be. It's different. So, yeah.
That's funny. I always tell this story. It was such bull crap. Like, and we knew it was bull crap. Mm-hmm. Like, because, I mean, enough of the guys on our hockey team here knew that this was crap. But there was some national ranking of, like, for double A hockey. Not even triple A, but double A hockey. And it had us ranked as the second ranked team in the country.
Oh, man.
But
okay.
But we all, like, only, like, two kids on the team really bought into the hype.
Yeah.
Everyone else was looking at each other. It was like, psh, no. Like, no. We play in a weak conference. So we're scraping everyone. They're doing it by goal differential. It's crap. Now, I mean, I could hear an argument of us being a top 50 team in the country.
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Which is respectable.
Yeah, like, hell yeah. From Louisville, Kentucky? Yeah. Hell yeah. Okay, cool. But one of the parents of a kid who wasn't on our team. So I thought they were hating a little bit, but they were also being 100% true. They said, Nick, you know that there's 10 kids in Michigan that have never met each other that could just strap up against you right now and beat you by 10. And I was like, yeah, I know. But it's still, like, you know, it's fun. But we know it's bullcrap. We make it to Mid-Ams. Mid-Ams is like the regional. You win this, you go to nationals. So we're in this tournament. And we play a team from Toledo that we've never played all season.
Ohio,
we have our little, you know, conference region that we play, you know, Northern Kentucky, Cincinnati, Lexington, West Virginia, you know, those guys. We scrape them all. But we're playing against the other spots in the region. So we play these guys, and I ran into them in the hotel. Nicest guys, just goofy kids. They're wrestling with the vending machine, almost like the Hanson brothers.
Yeah.
You know, nice guys, good dudes. But there's like 8 of them. And we're like, we're playing a team of 8, and they've got, like, ragtag jerseys? Like, what the f***? Beat us by 11. These kids, the opening faceoff, to this day, the fastest kid I've ever seen, takes it right off the opening draw. It just splits the defense, boom, like a shot, and scores a goal. And we all look at each other. We're like, all right, fluke. We got him. We'll wear him down. Dump and chase. We'll grind him into dust. Nope. Like, I mean, they absolutely kick the crap out of us. And I think they had 9 guys.
Wow.
They had 9 guys. They didn't even have 2 full lines.
Yeah.
And they beat the brakes off of the second ranked team in the country. And it was at that point I was like, we're supposed to be pretty decent.
Yeah.
And we just got outclassed by a ragtag team from Toledo. Not Minnesota, not Michigan, not Connecticut, Toledo, Ohio. absolutely beat the brakes off of us. The other thing, this was kind of cool, but when I was in middle school, we had like, you know, we're playing majors, you know, mm-hmm. like, you know, before you go into the big field, before yeah. you know, make the jump to the, you know, the regulation size field. Mm-hmm. So the last time you're on the little kid fields, there were like four pitchers that could throw like 70. And at that like distance, like me and a lot of kids struggled because, and then you make the jump to the big field, you have that extra half second, you mm-hmm. know, because the mound gets moved back. I actually could hit again,
yeah,
you know, but like, but my entire middle school, I was the worst hitter on the planet because I couldn't catch up to these guys. There was one kid, I remember his name. My dad even said, he was like, that lefty is special. Like, there's a kid named Nick Greenwood, who was just a great athlete. Great, yeah. Best soccer player in the school, best basketball player in the school, was, you know, an electric pitcher. But he was just mowing kids down. Flash forward 15 years later, I'm running the board here. Mm-hmm. I just started at yeah. ESPN Louisville. I'm sitting behind the board. I'm like fresh out of college. I'm like 24 or whatever. And I'm on the board, and I hear, you know, Jeff Brantley. You know, Nick, you know, like Greenwood comes in to pitch for the Cardinals. And I'm like, Greenwood, wait a minute. And they, like, he's like, Nick's had a pretty solid, you know, rookie season so far, you know, with like a point, like two, like, you know, like one, like 1.75 ERA, you know, coming in from the bullpen. And I look it up, and sure enough, it's Nick Greenwood. And I was like, I remember him. I was like, I remember that kid. Yeah, he was mowing me down. He made it all the way to the majors. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was kind of cool. But yeah, it was, there were a couple of, like, he was probably the best athlete I ever, you know, had to. And I competed with him and competed.
Yeah.
I'm saying, I didn't compete with him. He schooled me
yeah.
in every single sport. Like in soccer, he broke my ankles. In basketball, he broke my ankles. In baseball, he was mowing me down. Yeah. Like, I don't even think I made contact. Yeah. So, like, Greenwood, yeah. But he was doing that with everybody.
Yeah.
No. But yeah, sure enough. So, yeah, that was probably one of the best athletes I've
played. It's funny because, like, it's because for me, it's like different people. So when I was younger, when I went to the first ever Camp Rondo, when they had like, I guess they're on like number 16 or 17, whatever. So I went to the very first one as a child, and everybody was pretty good. And I felt like I was decent or whatever. But then there was one kid that was just like effing amazing.
Yeah.
But he had to play up like two, three grades. Like, he was just that good. Like, yeah, this dude's that. Ended up being Quinn Snyder.
Oh, wow.
ended up being Quinn Snyder. Like, he was, like, awesome. Like, and now he's Ballard's all-time leading scorer, and, like, he's Quinn Snyder. And then I remember, like, being in high school, and Devontae Parker for a long time was really known more as a basketball player than a football player.
Really?
When he decided to, like, hone in
on his
football
skills. Both, but
he was like, I think he thought he was going to be a hooper. Like, with everything he did at Louisville and the pros, I think he thought he was going to do that, like, in the NBA. Like, wow. Really. Like, I think he thought, like, for a long time. And, like, he's 6'3 and can jump like crazy. And that's amazing on a football field. But everybody can do that on a basketball court.
Yeah, right. And especially somebody, when you get up to the higher
levels,
right?
Like, if you're not 6'5, it's hard to make it to the NBA. Like, it's just hard.
It just is.
So, like, I think somebody's like, hey, man, you should probably focus in on the football stuff. You could. And then he did, and he was amazing.
Yeah,
like,
and the rest is history, yeah.
Yeah, so those were the two, like, as far as sports. And then, like I said, the best high school player I ever played against in football was James Quick.
James Quick.
James was just different. Like, it was like a video game. Like, it was like a dude that was, like, it looked like he was getting controlled by a dude with a joystick.
Right.
And he was just embarrassing folks all the time.
Dude,
and it wasn't just here. It was all across
the country.
They
have, like, an extra gear.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I can't. There was a kid, they nicknamed him Happy because he got fat after he stopped playing.
Okay.
And so they called him that for Happy Meals. They said he ate a bunch of Happy Meals. Mm-hmm. But Justin Hernandez, filthy. Like, probably one of the best hockey players I ever played against. Like, I was playing, at this time I'm playing college. Mm-hmm. Club, you know, at U of L.
Yeah.
And we're a terrible club team. But I was the best player on the team. We were just starting out. So I was like, I think I'm okay. And then he comes, and he's coming from UConn, NCAA D1. And he did these stick handling moves in the summer league that were just, I was like, it's filthy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he had like a stint in the minors and everything that. Like, I just remember being like, oh.
Yeah,
that's what real college hockey looks like. And he was playing at UConn, which is like decent, but I mean, it's the equivalent of like playing at, I'm trying to think of like a college equivalent of like playing at like Fresno State.
Yeah,
you know, something like that. Like, you know, like mid-major.
All right. UConn hockey's sick now.
Oh no, they're
at
good.
The time,
they're
at
good
the
now.
Time,
at the
though,
time,
yeah.
they were like a mid-major.
Yeah.
But what about you, Tanner? You played in Connecticut. I'm sure you played. You played at U of L.
I don't
sure
remember the kid's name, but I was a junior, and we went to like Hamden, Connecticut, to play like Hamden High School.
Oh, the bunker, that like bunker rink. I remember Hamden. Those kids were always rough.
I remember one like before the game, they were like talking about like the other team, and they're like, "Oh yeah, like there's a freshman. He's like committed to Maine," and I was like, "What? Like 14-year-old to Maine? Like already?" And they're like, "Yeah." And then sure
you're
enough,
playing high school hockey. Yeah, not, we're playing high school. This is high school hockey.
We were up going into the third, 4-1. And then like someone was like, "Yeah, that Maine kid kind of sucks, huh?" And then he scored like 4 straight goals and he just won the game. And I was like, I don't want to hear anyone talk trash about that kid ever again. I don't even remember the name though. I got to look it up, but that. And then I played up in Lake Placid as a, I think I was in 8th grade, and we were playing a Canadian team. And my dad was like, "Hey, you know what you should do before the game? At the puck drop, just ask if if they drink Molson." So I did that, and then the kid my age, like 13, he was like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Whoa." And
this kid drinks beer?
Oh, and then the next, puck drops, and then they went down and scored right away. And I was like, "Ooh, yeah, we might be screwed. These are Canadians." I forgot. And then I think they won 10-1.
10-1?
And we were on the 19...
shut out at least.
Yeah, and we were on the 1980s rink, and it felt so bad because our coach reamed into us after. Shout out John Lewis, though. He's a good man, good coach.
Nice. 437-9680 UPS jobs text line. Texter says, "Alvin Sims at Paris humbled my entire team. He dunked so hard from the free throw line, he stripped the nuts and bolts that connected the rim to the backboard." Sounds like an Alvin Sims story.
Oh, we had Allen Iverson's cousin in our town. And yeah, no, he went to Memphis and then transferred to URI. But that was the greatest athlete I think I've ever seen. Karan Iverson was his name.
Karan Iverson, yeah, I remember him.
Oh, my goodness. I think he played for Hurley at URI, too, which kind of helped Hurley jumpstart his career to
UConn.
To UConn, yeah.
Let's see here. This texter says, "Mine was 8th grade basketball. We played against a team with DeJuan Wheat and Chris Griffin. They were tossing alley-oops and warm-ups. We were done before the tip." Yeah, that sounds about... Yeah. That's kind of tough to compete with that.
It is very hard, man. DeJuan Wheat? Like, you didn't have a chance.
Oh, God. It was so weird at U of L. There were actual really good hockey players at U of L, but they were all on varsity teams. We had Chris Malik, who I think... and this other kid, Riley, I can't remember his last name, but Riley was Canadian, and Chris played like AAA in like Buffalo, but he was on the golf team, and they came out and played with us when we played against UK, and they were both filthy. Like, they were both incredibly good players. We actually, our first D2 win was against Wright State, and Malik had like 4 goals in that game. I think I had like 2 assists, but he like carried the team. And like, and then he was like, "Yeah, this is the last time I can play with you. My coach found out I was playing hockey," and he threatened to kill me. Understandably.
Yeah.
Like, he was like, "Yeah, I can't." He's like, "But you know, I really like it. I like playing." Like, he was the nicest guy.
I had fun.
Like, yeah, I had fun.
We had
Riley played on the Corn Ferry Tour for a little while, and I just remember his the
can
first.
Can they change the name of that too?
I know. Yeah, it's so weird. But like, that was the thing. Like, it was all these guys that were like their secondary sport. They were better at me. They were better than I was, and it was so frustrating. I can't remember. Oh my God, I'm drawing a blank. Matt, he won the national championship. He's by the track stadium. I can't remember his last name. I'm drawing a blank, but text it in if you know. He won the steeplechase. He was a national champion steeplechase guy, Canadian dude, and he came out to play. And was just ripping shots that, like, because at the end of practice, we all, you know, screw around or whatever. And so I would, you know, practice deflections. I would just have, like, "Hey, you know, someone go to the point and just rip some clappers, and I'll try to work on some deflections." And he was putting the puck, like, on my stick. I didn't even have to do anything. And while moving, like, stationary, you know, sprint, like, coming down the ice. And I was like, dude, we got to get you playing. He's like, I want to play so bad. He's like, but I just signed a contract with Reebok. You know, I guess I'm on the national track team for Canada. He was like, I'll see if I can get, if they'll let me play. And then he got back. He's like, they won't let me play. And I was like, totally understand that, bro. Yeah.
Can't mess with the money.
Can't mess with the money. But he was like, he wanted to. He was typical Canadian. Mm-hmm. Nicest dude on the planet. Filthy hockey player. But I just was like, let me get this straight. You're a national champion in track. And you'd be the best player on the hockey team, and probably in the, like in our conference. Yeah. Like you, like he was just absolutely like ridiculously good, and just an excellent dude. Excellent, like really, really nice guy. A couple more texts coming in here. My son played football for Hazelwood Middle in New Albany. QB on the team was Rondell Moore. Running back was Jarius Brents. And Stephen Heron played on both lines. He was also classmates with Romeo Langford. Yeah, that's
wow.
Yeah, that's. That's some serious talent there. Let's see. Playing Shane as a 6-foot white dude was something. Yeah, I can imagine playing against him would be a little tricky. This texter says, I played against Rondo in AAU basketball. We were 15, and he was on another level. Biggest hands I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's Shane Gillis says, he's like, yeah, when you're in eighth grade and you see the first dude dunk,
yeah,
and every white kid just starts setting screens because that's how you help win.
Yeah, absolutely. This guy also says, my son played with Rondell Moore. I played against C.J. Spillman, and my dad played with Chris Dishman. Had an uncle play high school football with Bubba Parrish. Wow, those are some big names there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, everyone has a story of going up against somebody.
And the thing about Rondell, because he's not very big.
Yeah.
So he's not intimidating. So if you just see a, you know, especially if I can't imagine what he looked like when he's a child, right? Like,
right.
He's not very big now as a man. And so you see, like, oh, yeah, you know, because some people just physically look different.
Right.
Like, it's like, okay. I don't have a chance against that. Like I was telling about Ryan White, like physically he just looked different than every other eighth grader. But Rondale was kind of like, okay. And then you see, like, oh, okay. Yeah, we can't catch up to that.
Yeah, no,
guy.
Yeah. He is so fast. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's one of those things. Yeah. When you, like, sometimes, like, you'll hear the hype around a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be like, you know, okay, like he doesn't look that much different.
And
then all
exactly.
of a sudden it's just like, oh, yeah. They got that extra gear. Mm-hmm. It's just, yeah, you can't compete with that. We are joined now by our man, Mark Carter Story, at Mark C Story on Twitter. Mark Story from the Lexington Herald Leader joins us now, talking a little UK. Mark, did you have a good 4th of July? All your digits intact?
All my digits are intact. 4th of July is actually my brother's birthday, so I helped my brother celebrate his birthday.
Well, there you go. That's pretty cool. That's always fun. Yeah, no, that's good, and I'm glad you didn't blow your fingers off. That's always a successful 4th of July, for sure. But a lot of stuff to get to. We haven't talked UK in a little while here, but you recently wrote a story about the big dog. Vince Marrow, and said that one of the highly paid Kentucky Wildcats coaches more than earning his money. I mean, I read the story. Anybody that wants to read the story can go to the Lexington Herald Leader or go to Mark's Twitter and read it as well. But can you elaborate a little bit about what you wrote on? Why is the big dog Vince Marrow earning his keep?
Well, Kentucky football has had a good recruiting run this summer, and Vince has been the biggest reason why. You know, they've been really successful in Ohio, and they've gotten commitments from the two top-ranked players in the state of Kentucky, and, you know, that those are Vince's areas, and, you know, he's just had a really good recruiting cycle. I think 24/7, when at the time that column was written, 24/7 had him ranked as the fifth most effective recruiter for the class of 2025 in the nation, and, you know, that's fairly strong.
No, he's absolutely doing a great job. And, I mean, with the addition of Brohm, I know a lot of Louisville fans thought that maybe the battle for the bluegrass in terms of recruiting would sway a little bit more in favor in Louisville's way. But so far, I mean, it seems to be, you know, Kentucky is still getting the pick of the top talent in the state. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I just want to ask you, Mark, just speaking on Marrow and UK, especially success in the 25 class, what is it that they're able to do that separates them, that's allowing them to have so much success on the recruiting trail right now?
Well, I think, you know, they've gone back into Ohio in a big way. They actually have not been as reliant on Ohio as they in recent years as they were early in the Stoops era. I think, you know, they have kind of a strange inverse relationship with Ohio State. When Ohio State recruits well nationally, that helps Kentucky because it frees up more players in Ohio for Kentucky, and I think that's happened this year. Ohio State has the number one ranked recruiting class in the country, and I think, but they've only taken seven Ohio prospects. They've recruited nationally to a large degree, and that's helped Kentucky. I also think in Ohio, Kentucky's been helped by the fact there have been coaching transitions at Michigan and Michigan State. You know, those are kind of the teams Kentucky has ended up recruiting against a lot in the state of Ohio, and I think, you know, they've sort of, there's been a confluence of events outside Kentucky's control that's worked in their favor, and to their credit, I think they've been able to take advantage of them.
Now, Mark, just sticking on that, I know recruiting rankings are one thing, but because forgive me for not being familiar, but who are some of the players from the state of Ohio that's helped Kentucky throughout the Mark Stoops era, if you don't mind reminding me and some of the audience?
Well, Benny Snell, obviously.
Okay.
Came from Ohio and became the all-time leading rusher in Kentucky history. Mike Edwards, who was a
yes.
very good defensive back at Kentucky and then went on to has won two Super Bowls in his pro career, one with Tampa Bay and one with Kansas City. You know, Darian Kennard, who was first-team All-American offensive tackle, came from Cleveland. Logan Stenberg, who is the Jacksonville Jaguars starting center. Not Logan Stenberg, Luke Fortner, who is the Jacksonville Jaguars starting center and was a three-year offensive line starter, you know, came out of Ohio. C.J. Conrad, the tight end, arguably the best tight end of the Stoops era, came out of Ohio. George Asafo Adjai, the offensive tackle who was drafted by the New York Giants, came out of Ohio. I'm sure I'm leaving
yeah.
out somebody incredibly
okay.
prominent, but
so I was just
Ohio yeah. has been good to Kentucky. As I said, it was a far more of an emphasis early in the Stoops era than it had been lately. But you know, for the reasons I think for the reasons that I mentioned, they're back in Ohio in a big way this year.
Mark Story of the Lexington Herald Leader joining us now. We were talking in the bullpen about some questions to ask you about UK football, and definitely want to get your thoughts on the roster and some of the storylines going into the season. But, I mean, there was some talk of Mark Stoops flirting a little bit with Texas A&M. What do you think his current relationship is with Mitch Barnhart?
I think it's okay. I mean, I don't think at the administrative level Kentucky was offended by that. And, you know, when it became apparent that it wasn't going to work out, you know, there was no, to my knowledge, there was no question, you know, that they weren't going to let him come back. I mean, beyond the fact he hadn't left. But to my knowledge, their relationship is fine. I never had any indication that the administration at UK was offended by the Texas A&M situation, partly because that just came. That was kind of a one-day story. It sort of blew up that Saturday before the Louisville game, and then by midnight that night, it was over. So,
well, staying with coaching a little bit, I mean, there's a new, fourth, fifth year in a row, there's a new offensive coordinator for Kentucky football and Bush Hamden. He also has a pro style similar to William Cohen, but how do you think he's going to mesh with UK football? Is there going to be a big transition there, or just the fact that he also is a pro style guy, just like William Cohen, that you think like this will be an easy transition?
Well, that's a great question. And there was one of those anonymous coaching comments that is it Athlon that does, and they pointed out that they, you know, they basically change offensive coordinators every year, but that's been fairly seamless. I mean, I guess the Rich Scangarello year didn't go very well, but otherwise they've made these changes and it hasn't, you know, just completely sabotaged the program. You wonder at some point if that catches up with them, but, you know, obviously we're sort of, you know, wait and see on Bush Hamden. I thought his numbers last year calling the offense at Boise State were good. They were incredibly balanced between the run and the pass, which I think is what Mark Stoops would like to be. I think, you know, they want to get back a little more to the physical running game. You know, a lot of what they did, you know, their two 10-win seasons, they were able to, you know, run the ball downhill, and, you know, they could run out. You know, when they got leads in the fourth quarter, they could, you know, run it out. And they really haven't had that capacity the last 2 years, and I think it's hurt them. You know, I think Ray Davis was their best player last year as a running back, mm-hmm. and I think he was the most dynamic running back they've had, you know, along, other than or along with Boom Williams. He was the most dynamic running back they've had in the Stoops era, but they did not have the ability. They were not good on short yardage. They couldn't just pound you for 4 or 5 yards a time, and I think they would like to see some more of that. So I think that's something they're going to try to reestablish. You know, the one thing with Hamden, while he does have some pro elements in his, he's not as much a pro style coordinator as Cohen or Scangarello. I think, you know, he'll run a lot more no huddle. I think they'll spread it more. I don't think you'll see quite as much two tight ends. So I do think it will be a little bit more of a quote-unquote college-style offense as opposed to the pro style they've used the last 3 years.
You mentioned Ray Davis. How's Kentucky going to be without him this year?
I think that's a great question. To me, the two biggest questions offensively, and they're big questions, you know, obviously Brock Vandegrift at quarterback, I think there's every reason to be optimistic about him based on, you know, his, you know, five-star recruit. You know, the fact he's been at Georgia where you know he's been well coached, and I don't think there's any reason to hold it against him that he wasn't able to beat out Carson Beck, who may be the best quarterback in the country. But all that said, he's completely unproven. So, you know, that's a question. And I think running back is a question. You know, on paper, I don't know that they have, you know, anybody that, you know, you sort of had a direct line from Boom Williams to Benny Snell to Christopher Rodriguez to Ray Davis, and that's, you know, four of the best running backs in school history. And I don't know that they have anybody at that level. So I think running back is a legitimate question.
Well, I mean, you kind of, brought up what my next question was going to be, talking a little bit about Brock Vandegrift. Yeah, five-star from Georgia, but he doesn't have the experience that Devin Leary had coming in. How big of an impact do you think that lack of experience is going to be? And is this going to be seen as like a lateral move at quarterback, a step back? What do you think his ceiling is?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. It's hard to answer that because he's played so little as a collegiate. I think based on his high school, you know, his recruiting hype and the fact he's been at Georgia, I think there's, you know, I go into this season optimistic about him that he can be good. You know, he's actually less experienced even than Will Levis was when he came. Levis at least had started a couple of games and had been used regularly as Penn State's kind of running quarterback option. You know, Vandegrift, you know, just has done some mop-up, and that's pretty much all he's done at Georgia. So he's even a more of a blank slate than even Levis was when he came. But, you know, based on his recruiting hype and the fact he's coming from Georgia, and they've had really good quarterbacks, and, you know, that's a well-coached, you know, the Georgia program that they coach well. So I think there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic about Vandegrift. But as we've said, a complete blank slate, basically, as a collegian.
Yeah, no, we'll see. You know, we do have the adage on the V Show of let the cake bake. We'll see, you know, how he develops. One more for me on the football side before we shift to basketball a little bit. But there's also a new face in the receivers room with Coach Dekel Shorts. I think I said that right. How do you see him, improving the production of the receiver corps?
Well, you know, he's helped them already as a recruiter. He landed a really good wide receiver prospect out of Texas, which, you know, is completely him because they weren't recruiting Texas before they hired him from Houston. I think he was a good player himself and is still relatively young. So I think he'll be able to relate well to the wide receivers. You know, obviously this will be the third year starting for Berrion Brown and Dane Key, and you know, they're both very talented. You know, I thought their sophomore years were a little up and down. I thought they both started a little slow. I thought Dane, you know, became more consistent as the season went along. And I thought Berrion closed on a great note because he was humongous in the win over Louisville and was very good against Clemson in the Gator Bowl. So, you know, I think both those guys come into this season with some momentum, but I think where Schwartz can make a big impact, if he can, you know, get more consistency and just sort of help, you know, these really talented receivers, you know, just become more consistent and, you know, carrying out assignments, running routes and just, you know, being more consistent in catching the ball. You know, I think he has a chance as an assistant to make a big impact on the Kentucky team and the Kentucky season.
So switching over to basketball, Mark, I'm looking at the Kentucky men's basketball non-conference schedule that was released today. Are there anything that kind of stands out to you as far as the scheduling in year one for Coach Mark Pope?
No, not really. I mean, he was sort of locked in. All the big games were already locked in. You know, Duke in the Champions Classic, Ohio State in the CBS Sports Classic. They're in the third year of a 6-year contract to play Gonzaga. You know, SEC, ACC Challenge. You know, all the big games, you know, were sort of locked in for him. So I can't say that I think there's any great evidence of his, you know, impact on the scheduling, just because, you know, it was sort of already set up.
Now, I wanted to ask you, are there any of these non-conference games, I'm specifically looking at the WKU game, that you could see that maybe, because this is a brand new team with a brand new coach, that maybe you could see a stumble or two anywhere on this non-conference?
Well, I think Western has a chance. Western historically has played UK tough in most sports. And, you know, Western, I think those of us old enough to remember, I guess it was the 2001-2002 season, Western came into Rupp Arena with Chris Marcus and Patrick Sparks and upset Kentucky when I think UK was ranked number 4. And Western has a whole lot back from an NCAA tournament team. So I think that could be a tough game. You know, I would be surprised if Kentucky lost it, but, you know, heck, I was surprised, you know, last year when they lost to UNC, Wilmington.
Wilmington, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I think that is potentially an interesting game. I mean, I would think Kentucky would win it just because I expect Kentucky to win all their games in Rupp Arena. But, you know, I think Western will come to that believing they have a chance. And given what they have back from a team that made the tournament, I think they would have at least some chance.
Now, Mark, just talking about Coach Pope, the new team, just what are the reports so far from the practices about the guys gelling? Are you hearing of anyone that's standing out, or what's kind of the vibe so far down in Lexington with the brand new team?
Yeah, I've been on vacation and I'm just back, so I haven't heard a lot of that scuttlebutt. You know, I thought one of the more interesting comments I saw was from Cameron Mills, who I think is able to watch practices as a former player, and basically said it's a team full of Trey Mitchells, which I took positively in that it's a team with, you know, a lot of veteran, you know, quality college basketball players. You know, I don't think this team, you know, has the amount of, well, I mean, I don't think anybody thinks this team has the amount of can't-miss NBA talent that Kentucky has had, you know, pretty much throughout the Calipari era. But I do think it has a lot of sort of proven quality college basketball players. And if that meshes, I think you could have I think they can have a really good team.
Mark Story of the Lexington Herald Leader joining us at Mark C. Story on Twitter. Kyle Tucker of The Athletic kind of broke down the power rankings of the SEC, used certain things like number of top 100 recruits, top 100 transfer portals, number of D1 minutes that were played, three-point shots made. And he kind of used that to break down what he thought, you know, the rankings of the SEC were. And he has UK at 6th in the conference. Do you agree with that? Do you think they should be higher or lower?
I would have to break. I haven't really looked at the full conference. But to me, that seems a little low. But, you know, I think the SEC is good. I think the top of the SEC, you know, I think Alabama, there's a pretty good case for them to be number one in the country. You know, Texas, you know, there are a lot of teams that have a lot back. Texas A&M has a whole lot back. Heck, they beat Kentucky twice last year. So, you know, again, without having studied every roster, 6 to me seems a little low, but, you know, I do think the SEC is better. You know, I think part of the quote-unquote decline in results at the end of the Calipari era, you know, some of that is because the league got better. It's just better. I mean, there are better coaches. There are more good teams. There's more emphasis, and there seems to be more resources being put into basketball at some of these schools. And it's just it's a tougher league than it was, you know, at the start of the Calipari era, for sure.
I just want your thoughts on Mark Pope right now. I mean, both coaches. I mean, it seems to be. You know, I mean, we're still kind of in the honeymoon phase, I want to say, of both Pat Kelsey here at Louisville and Mark Pope in Lexington with the UK. But, I mean, both guys, I mean, let's be honest, weren't the number one choice coming in, or at least originally, for both of their respective schools. I've been very impressed with the work Pat Kelsey's done here in the 502. I mean, he's got the fans excited. Whether that be doing car washes on local media on our station, you know, doing fun social media videos. I saw Mark Pope today running around Kroger Field in a football helmet. I mean, what are your thoughts on what he's done from a PR standpoint to get fans to buy into this new Kentucky basketball regime?
Well, I think he's been a really good hire from that standpoint. I think, you know, I think a lot of the fans had come to believe that Calipari just wasn't promoting Kentucky, that, you know, his emphasis was – I think a lot of the fans wanted Kentucky basketball to be more about Kentucky and less emphasis on, you know, how many players had been drafted. You know, we can argue whether that's a smart recruiting strategy, but I think Mark Pope, because he played here, he was, you know, the captain of a national championship team, because he – genuinely understands the program and, you know, understands the magnitude of how much it means to the state and is able to communicate that. I think he's been, you know, kind of what the doctor ordered. Now, to me, kind of the next step for him, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of, you know, focus on how they recruit and who they sign in the early period. I think people understand that they're not trying to sign, that it's going to be a different approach. They're not trying to sign 6 of the top 20 players in the country every year as they were doing under the previous coach, but you do want to sign some of those guys. You may not want to be the one-and-done factory, but you still want to have access to NBA-level talent. So I think kind of the next hurdle is just kind of who are they able to sign in this early period, and can they, you know, get a couple of those guys, you know, just, you know, one or two of the kind of guys that Kentucky is sort of associated with. And, if you know, I think that's the next hurdle to be cleared, so to speak.
Mark Story, always appreciate the time, my friend. Give him a follow at Mark C. Story on Twitter. Mark, you have a wonderful weekend right around the corner, man. Thanks for the time.
Thanks for having me, guys.
That was good stuff from Mark Story. Talked a little UK football, a little UK basketball. Covered, I think, all our bases there.
Yeah.
I should have got his thoughts on, you know, the Batcats and everything. But, uh-oh, you know, that, but I think we did.
Yeah, we did good. It was, that was interesting what he said about when Ohio State does well nationally, it helps Kentucky in the state of Ohio.
Yeah.
I thought that's a correlation that you don't always think about. Like, especially because Ohio in itself is very talent-rich. I mean, you heard all the players that played for Kentucky, that played, you know, they came out of Ohio. So it's very talent-rich. But when Ohio State hits, and they have hit the transfer portal hard nationally because they saw the defections at Alabama and Michigan and stuff and were able to take. And they're just recruiting nationally because they can, they're Ohio State. But to know that trickles down and the coaching changes at Michigan and Michigan State helps a place like UK because Vince Mero is so connected there. That was really a cool nugget Mark threw in there, and I'm like, I think I'm gonna start paying attention to that.
Yeah,
now.
Seriously. Yeah, I never really thought of that. I mean, you know, when you think of you know, football talent, you think of what, Florida, Texas,
yeah,
you know, maybe California,
absolutely.
But I mean, there is, you know, there are other states that there's good.
The southern states always get the most love, like you said, Florida.
Georgia too.
But Louisiana has a ton of football talent. Mississippi. Then of course you go over to Texas. You go out to California. But Ohio, per capita, Ohio has a lot of. Like I had a football coach who is from Ohio, is actually Keith Tobridge. Keith Tobridge that played for U of L, he's from Toledo. And he coaches high school football. Now he coaches for Purdue. But he coached high school football for a while. And he told me even the high school system in like Ohio from when he played versus Kentucky now is different. He's really? Like, yo, bro, like we're like light years ahead of you guys. And it's not like a diss. Yeah, it's right. Just the truth.
Just is
and
what
so,
it is, right.
And that's why they produce so many players out of that state. And so to hear that when Ohio State does well nationally, it can actually trickle down and help UK come in and snag a couple of guys in Ohio because of Vince Merrill, how good he is at
recruiting.
They
have that established. And I feel like it also, I mean, it really just bangs home the point that the importance of having those pipelines.
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, you heard all that talent, and I was like, oh, yeah, if I remember him. I remember him. Oh, yeah, I remember him. I mean,
these dudes playing in the league. It was a lot of NFL dudes. Like, it was a lot of NFL dudes. And the one thing that and people have gotten mad at me, but I don't care. Like, that's been lackluster about the Brom experience so far. It's been short, but that's been lackluster. Has been recruiting.
Right.
Like they have not recruited high school as well as I thought they would up until this point. I thought
great
they would
job
have,
with the transfer portal.
Yeah,
but
they have been working the portal, but the lifeblood of your program, the portal is to me, and this is just my opinion, and it could be proven wrong, but if you want to break the glass ceiling of being an ACC champion, not just in the championship game, of being a real contender in the playoff, not just making it, not just happying to be there.
Right.
If you want to break that glass ceiling, your high school recruiting has to be top notch.
Right.
Like it has to be consistently within the top, at least the top 30. Top 35. Like it has
I'd
to
agree with that. I agree with that.
If you want to really, really compete on the level of those teams, then you eventually have to move into the top 25 consistently. But I'm not even asking for that. I think Louisville, as standard as it is right now, should consistently be a top 35 recruiting team when it comes to the high school rankings. Right now, they're not, and they haven't been. And that, to me, is going to be a hindrance because it's only so often where you can turn out these one-year players to not have any kind of establishment of guys that can be in your program for multiple years and be multiple-year starters and really contribute and have high ranking and come in and contribute right away out of high school. That is going – That's going to hinder how good you can be. That's not to say you can't be good, but if you want to be the ACC champions, if you want to really compete when it comes to this 12-team playoff, your high school recruiting is going to have to take up a notch.
No, I mean, that's one thing that, I mean, give the devil his due. I mean, Satterfield didn't have terrible recruiting.
At the end, he was killing it.
I mean, it arguably saved his job for that. He bought himself another year because, I mean, you had the Reuben Owenses that were supposed
DeAndre
to be coming.
Moores,
DeAndre
Pierce
Moores,
Clarkson.
Right.
Like, all those guys were coming. Like, they were going to come. Obviously, the coaching change happens. Pierce still comes, but the rest of them decided to go, you know, the separate ways. And that's what bothers me is because Satterfield was able to do it.
Right.
Like, why was Sat able to do that and it hasn't carried on? Like, okay, even if you say the first class, like, was mosh posh because you're getting the job in December versus getting it in, you know, getting a full year. But the 24 class, you had a full year.
Right.
And it didn't look like anything like Sat's last class
that
he was putting together. Then this 25 class looks nothing. It's not even as good as the 24 class.
Right.
Like, you know, ranking wise or whatever. So it's like, what's going on there? Like, I feel like that's going the wrong direction. And people say, well, you're supplemented with the transfer portal. And I'm like, how long does that last?
Yeah,
How long does that last before you really have to kick it up a notch?
No, I agree with you. I feel like the transfer portal is definitely something you don't ignore.
And
give credit where it's due. They're doing a good job with the transfer portal. But I almost look at that as, like you said, recruiting is your steak. The transfer portal is your potatoes. Like, but you need to have like that base of talent coming in, and then there's the challenge of keeping them here. But when you have the NIL that they've bragged about with
and
good reason,
and I believe they have a good.
I mean, I
NIL is not a problem. Like, I can tell you that.
I got an inside source that told me the number that they their budget, and it is it's tasty.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a very good NIL number. But I'm trying to rack my brain right now. I mean, you know where the pipeline is for Kentucky.
Yeah.
we don't. Where is the Brom like recruit?
That's
pipeline?
The thing. Like
I
that,
mean, like
yeah.
like Satterfield had the St. John Bosco. He had
yeah,
the California,
he had the California
pipeline.
Connection.
Before
yeah.
that, Charlie Strong had the Florida.
Yes.
You know, I mean, there isn't really a pipeline yeah. yet established.
And even Bobby had a Florida Georgia
yes.
thing going on. Like
yes.
even Bob, because that's where Lamar came from. He like he was real heavy in Georgia, and then he hit on Florida a lot. Charlie obviously was an all-Florida guy with a heavy Georgia influence as well. Right now, we don't really have one.
No.
And that's not good. Like, let's just no. call it what it is. It's not good. Like,
no, that's something that needs to be improved.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
No, for sure. Well, good stuff there. 1 hour in the books. We'll take a top-of-the-hour break. Work some of your texts in. Chris Jones scheduled to join us now about 2 o'clock,
yeah,
I think
he's got pushed back a little bit, but he's still on schedule to come in.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, maybe the fabulous one, Phil Baker, can tag in for a little bit. We'll see. We got a lot of stuff to get to. Louis Rabeau brought up a story in The Athletic that maybe we can talk a little bit about. Fights in soccer, you know, crazy things happening last night. There is some soccer nuggets to talk about. Yeah, we'll work your text in as well. 437-968 UPS Jobs, Text Lines, The V Show, Jeff Lightsey Jr., Nick Valvano, Tanner Bertomesso, and for Bobby V today on a Thursday on ESPN 680-1057.